Work.
Like if y'all remember that after the service tonight, we're going to have a brief time. We'll talk about our list. I don't know if you have any changes in your names, but we want to get back on that and send out cards to those who maybe we can have an impact on, or even make visits to those who that might be helpful to. So please remember that. I'd like tonight to talk about quotes for a second. Quotes. I looked for quotes that have impacted our society or impacted things that maybe taken out of context or maybe even truthful quotes that caused uproars. And I came across this one. I was going to hold seriously. I just have one. John Lennon said in 1966, he said, Christianity will go. It will vanish and shrink. We're more popular than Jesus now, he said. Now, he said this in a interview with a reporter in England in 1966. I think it was 6 months before they came and had their big first tour in the States. They were the Fab Four. Remember the Fab Four? Anybody old enough to remember the Fab Four? Anybody? And so it was a big deal, and they were taking the country by storm. So this came out in London and had no effect, really. It was a long interview where John Lennon is just going on about everything. He's talking about religion and his hobbies and things he likes. And the whole thing about the quote about Jesus and Christianity was actually, in larger context, fairly benign. He was saying he didn't really get it, but he wasn't really talking about it down about it that much, all right? And so, of course, he makes the point. I think there was more of the quote that I maybe don't have there. Oh, it goes on. He says, I don't know which will go first, rock and roll or Christianity. Jesus was all right, but his disciples were thick and ordinary. It's them twisting it that ruins it for me. Now, keep in mind that many people have this idea, going back to John Lennon, before John Lennon, in our day and time. Hey, give me Jesus, but not the church. Give me Jesus, but all the stuff that goes with Jesus. Hey, Jesus, in our pictures with like long-haired hippie. By the way, that's really probably not what Jesus was in his day and time. There was short hair, except for there was actually taking the Nazarite vow at the time. And Jesus was now, he didn't take the vow his whole life. He took the vow, didn't take the vow at all, as far as we know. But he was Nazarite because he was from Nazareth, not because he had a Nazarite vow. So Jesus probably had short hair. Maybe not as short as mine, but pretty short, right? And that was because that was the common thing with the Jews. They didn't have long flowing hair like we think of today, or is often seen. But the problem with this quote is that Paul said in 1 Corinthians 14, to those he was talking to, an apostle of Jesus Christ, he was the one that came out of due season. He said, if any man think himself to be prophet or spiritual, let him acknowledge that the things I write unto you are the commandments of the Lord. So when the apostles spoke, they spoke the words of Jesus. They were binding words of Jesus. They were things that Christ told them to teach by the Holy Spirit. So when you say, well, give me Jesus, or my picture of Jesus, but not the church, it doesn't work very well. In fact, it's anti-Bible to dismiss the words of John, Peter, or Paul. Not Beelzebub apostles, right? You can't dismiss those. You have to stay with them. Because if you throw away those things, you throw away the words of Jesus itself. You can't do that. It doesn't make any sense. But now, I want to talk about this quote for a second. In 1966, several months later, in July, an American teen magazine called Datebook, y'all remember Datebook? I never heard of it, ran a cover story called The 10 Adults You Dig or Hate the Most. You said language, dig. You dig. It goes back to 60s, right? He said, in section on John Lennon, they reprinted the quote by itself, the short quote I put up there, not the whole interview, without the rest of it. The result was quick and severe. Christians denounced the Beatles and began a campaign to destroy everything associated with the Fab Four. People went nuts in the country. I don't know if anybody was old enough to remember that, but it was pretty crazy. I wasn't here to. I just read what happened. Many radio stations, especially in the South, Midwest, stopped playing the records and even organized Beatles bonfires. There was actually an uproar where people burned tens of thousands of their records. This way before CDs, but yet even more taste if you have the records. They burned them. I mean, this was, at any size city, this was happening. It went so far as that some churches threatened to disfellowship members who listened to the Beatles. That might have happened, I don't know if it did, but and it, that was common, actually, through the Mid-South, the Bible Belt. And went so far as that George Paul Ringo received death threats. I don't condone this at all, but it went so far that there was death threats against the Beatles for this one quote that John made, right? Of course, John is a missionary, but the others are as receiving death threats. I don't know if he got some too or not. All this went down while the Beatles were on the American tour that took them right through the Bible Belt, right through the Mid-South and South. In fact, it was so bad a blockade was set up at August 13th concert in Memphis with no avail. In fact, it's kind of funny, but the group that got this blockade together was the KKK. Back this time when they were very strong, and of course I don't condone most of the things they would stand for, but they got together and they wanted to make blockade. Let's keep the Beatles from coming to Memphis. And of course they tried that, but they got through. The police were there and they got them through. Lennon, for his part, was shocked that such a statement, he said, 4 months before would have such an impact and cause such a havoc. So he said this in a Chicago press conference a couple days later. He said, "I'm not saying that we're better or greater or comparing us with Jesus Christ as a person of God, as a thing or whatever it is." See that reverence for God? "I wasn't saying whatever they're saying I was saying. I'm sorry I said it. I'm sorry. I never meant to be a lousy, anti-religious thing. I apologize if that will make you happy. I still don't know quite what I've done. I've tried to tell you what I did do, but if you want me to apologize, if that make you happy, then okay, I'm sorry." Now, if that were your kid, would you smack him? Now, the reaction was so severe, the Beatles never played another concert in the U.S. after this happened. The rest of their tour was canceled. Now, I want to take this, what happened in 66, and really, the outroar in churches saying, if your kids listen to Beatles, they're going to be withdrawn from it, they're going to be disfellowshipped. That happened across the country. Again, especially in the Mid-South and South. That was very serious. There were burning of Beatles records. I might remind you of the burning of the books in Ephesus in Acts 19, where all the books of sorcery were burned by those who had them when they were converted to Christ. By the way, there are books that need banned. I know in our country there's a big uproar right now that the conservative people are trying to burn books. And if you heard that story, have you seen reference to the books they're trying to ban? That depict explicit sex acts for kids. They have kids under 18 doing sex acts with other kids. And you can see it. It's not implied. Those are the books that are saying, hey, let's not put those in the library for elementary schools. And on TV you say, well, the conservative people are trying to ban books in schools. That's crazy. You know, that's called pornography. And we can't ban books. Even pornography, you have to have that in schools for fifth graders to read. You know, if you follow the news at all, parents would get up and at school board meetings across the land have read these books and been shut off, the Mac shut off because it's indecent. So you can't say it in a group of adults. Read the books in the kids' libraries and in your hometown schools. But kids can read these books and see all the pictures and things like that. It's crazy. Do you see how things have changed so much? It's kind of crazy. And we all know that it is not like the 60s. We know it's been a long time. It's changed a whole lot. I get that. But when we see how far things have changed, don't discount that what you do for the cause of Christ can have a major impact. You might be the only person in your family or group or work group that actually has a spine to know what God says and stand for it in a loving way, not hateful, not the KKK way, but just being loving and kind and saying, that's not, should we trans the kids? You know, this bill passed in Tennessee that said, hey, we should not trans kids under 18 years old. Meaning, but what by that, what they mean is, so you know, they mutilate boys and girls under 18. Boys have the parts that reproduce cut off. Mutilation, girls the same way. They have parts removed to them that will enable them to have kids later. You might say, well, they don't want to have kids anywhere. They decided at 10 years old they want to have kids. So they have the, at 10 years old, you can get a tattoo in Texas until you're 16. Let's say you can have parts removed by a surgeon when you're 10 and 12 years old. That is all kinds of wrong. Makes no sense. But the DOJ is attacking Tennessee. You're saying, you can have that law. You passed a law in your legislature, your people voted for, you passed it in law, but we're going to say you can't do it. By the way, most of the kids who decide they're trans when they're 10, 12, 13 years old, most of them come out of it by the time they're 18. Most change their mind. But yet, we're destroying our culture. You remember January 6th? January 6th, it was a big deal, and the grandmas went into the Capitol are now in prison still, most of them. By the way, there were mostly older people. There were young, but there were a lot of old people just trying to tour, and, hey, we like Trump, and we're going to go and protest, and peacefully protest at the Capitol. They're still in prison, lots of them are. But do you remember what happened in June the previous year? In June the previous year, you had George Floyd just happened. There were protests across the nation. And Trump came out and said, hey, let's not have this calm down, because these were fairly violent protests. The people are setting fire to things, you know, the summer of love. And the protests were so bad outside the White House that the crowd set the St. John's Church on fire, which was a church right aside, right next to the White House. In fact, the people got so rowdy that the Secret Service took Trump and put him in the bunker of the White House. It wasn't a choice. They took him and they made him go down there because it got so bad. They were like, we got to protect the president. And they went down to the bunker. And people made fun of it that Trump was hiding in the bunker. The church next to the White House was set on fire. But people went into a Capitol where the doors were opened by some other force, not the people. They didn't break in. Doors were open. We saw that on things that were let out recently by Tucker Carlson. People just let in. They walked in. Many of them are in prison right now to this day. Because it was domestic terrorism, and because it was deemed terrorism, there doesn't have to be a court date. The government give you one to one. They don't have to, though. So people are still in prison that they did that. Even though the people in Congress that had the tapes of what happened saw all the footage, but didn't bring it up, didn't defend these people, they just, you know, let's put them in prison. But June, the previous year, it's just fine. Set fire to church, make the president go into a bunker for safety. That's fine. My point is, you might not be political at all, and I'm probably more political than I should be, but you see the change? Trans the kids. Hey, let's not trans the kids. Riots! George Floyd never should have happened. That dude was a criminal that was high on fentanyl, chewed some crack rocks when he was being arrested, did not go to jail for the crack rocks. So he was imbibing. And so what happened to him was tragic, no doubt about that. But a violent criminal who was high on crack, and the police officer, which did what he was taught to do in the very training he received at the police academy, did the very thing he was taught to do in the way he was supposed to do it. Man died, unfortunately, wrongly. And that man's in prison. The cop's in prison who did what he was taught to do. You see what's happening in our culture? Now, I'm not here to be all depressing about it. Maybe this is more depressing than I thought it was, but here's the idea. When we love God and we have that water that boils, we talked about this morning, turn that steam engine, our water's got to boil, which means zealotry. Yeah, thank you. Zealotry, not meanness, not being angry. Loving people like Christ loved them. Which means being kind, sometimes direct, but always loving. Tell people the truth that sets them free. We talked about the greatness of heaven. How we should talk in heaven more to see how great things are going to be there and how God described us, we could see that. I want a home in heaven. I want a home that Jesus prepared for me. He said, I'll go prepare a place for you. I want to go there. That's amazing. I want that. If there's a God, though, and there's heaven, God also talks about the other place. There'll be judgment. And if God's real, if eternity is real, then we want to be bright. We want to shine as lights in darkness. And the more dark our culture is, the brighter your light can shine. It's something I tell myself every day, because this is not bad. We're in Central Texas. We're among good people, among largely neutral, God-fearing people. Ignorant, but not against God, right? Just kind of ignorant, don't really care. Some are, but mostly God-fearing people. So I'm in a good place. I tell myself every day, if I know God's real, and I were to die next week, would that change my life? Would it change who I talk to? Would it change what I would say publicly? Would it change how I would live privately if I knew that next week was my last week? Because that kind of thing matters. And we can't go back to 1966, and probably most of you wouldn't want to, at least in many ways. But to see our culture shifted so much, I want to go back to John 18, 37, 38. When Jesus was before Pilate. Pilate therefore said to him, art thou a king then? Jesus answered, thou sayest that I am a king, to this was I born. For this cause I came into the world, that I should bear witness unto the truth. Everyone that is of the truth hears my voice. And Pilate said to him, what is truth? When he had said this, he went out again to the Jews and said to them, I find no fault in him at all. They still wanted his blood. What is truth? Now, Jesus Christ died for truth, the truth. He was the Word. He was the Logos. He died teaching truth that God told him to teach. He went to the cross of Calvary because his Father told him to, so you and I could have life. And Jesus went to the cross. He said, Hebrews 12 says, he went with joy, not with grief. Not the cross, but the joy of saving you and me. I've thought before about what would a person die for? You know, there was this man you saw in the news, the 5 shot dead near San Jacinto, actually Cleveland, Texas. We lived down Highlands was right next door to San Jacinto, where the man who killed 5 people, man who was caught and put back across the border 3 times, got back across again and killed 5 people. The adults died, and there was one child killed too. they died protecting the children. In fact, a few of the kids survived. The parents jumped on, the adults jumped on top of the kids, and the gunman shot the adults in the back or front, whatever. And one kid still died, but a couple of the kids survived because the adults jumped on top of the kids to save them. That's a horrible thing. By the way, closing our borders is also fascism now, so we can't do that, I guess. We have to let people come over who kill others, and that's fine, I guess, but the thing is, if I were put in a position where I had to die for my children or grandkids at this point, who knows, I can see doing it, can't you? You can see doing it for your grandkids or out of your kids. I would die for them, maybe a niece or nephew. I would die for that. I would, if I had been saving them, I would do it. But I can't say I do with joy. I'd like to say I would do it. I think I would. You would never really know it until you're in the situation. But I can't imagine doing it with joy, not with grief. I would imagine if someone came in the back door right now with a gun, I think I would jump to protect her. I don't think I would do it with joy. I do it out of a sense of obligation. I do it like a sense of I'm a husband, she's my wife, I got to protect her. I think I'd do it for that reason. Maybe if you're on the way, I'd jump on you too. But I can't imagine being joyful. But Jesus went to the cross, he set us with joy, because he would save you and me. I didn't think you'd probably thought you'd get a John Lennon quote tonight, but you got one. It kind of shows us how far we've gone in our culture. But friends, there is hope. Every generation says for a long time, this next generation's, things are going crazy, things are falling apart. I feel that way. But all things aren't over. It's not all terrible. There's good things happening across the world. Just as there are those going in darkness, there are missionaries right now across the world preaching. India is a great place for India. They're preaching, and you have dozens that come to the gospel whenever a meeting's preached there. I remember a few years ago, I went to Jamaica, and I was there, and I helped preach a service where a few other American preachers took turns preaching. In fact, they had two sermons a night. We're in a Jamaica meeting house where it was loaded, people sitting outside, and you had two preachers, one that was warm up and one was the main preacher. Keith, two sermons one night. And we preached a long time. The first preacher preached it like an hour. They sang more songs, preached another hour, and when you got done, they're like, why do you stop so soon? They're placed like that. Not America, where things are not that way most of the time. Rarely, maybe, but not very often. I guess you have sometimes long-winded preachers like me who go on beyond 25, 30 minutes sometimes, but imagine going for 2 hours, half hour, 3 hours in the evening service. Songs and preaching, songs and preaching. They love it. India, you have the same kind of things happening. Because people travel a while to get to the church house, so when they travel a while to get there, they don't want to have a short sermon to go home. They want to hear a sermon, man. They want to hear some meat. And they're so thankful when you go there. They praise God for you when you're coming there and spending your time and money to go there and preach to them, and people obey the gospel. It's fantastic. In fact, I encourage anyone here who has the health and the time, find out these mission trips and go there where people are actually responding to the gospel. It might change your mind and do your heart really good to see how people respond to the gospel in places other than what we think of as very negative and bad. And there are people in Hyco. I wish the church was full tonight. There are people even here that will hear and want to do what God says if you just show them. We're afraid to show them because you get shut down so much. I know we're going to have a door knocking sometime soon. I don't know when exactly. I think we're going to have one scheduled sometime coming up. But these door knockings, which we spend a lot of time on, you know, every time we've done one, the people have come to church. Every time we've done one, thus we've done, how many, Brett? Now, two or three? Is it two? Two? Every time we've done one, it's kind of it's a hassle to go knock on doors. I'm from the church. Hey, wouldn't you come out? But every time we've done one, we had people show up to church the next time, the next Sunday. And some of those are turned into studies. Not a lot, but a little bit. There's been results. So there's good news out there. But listen, the point of the quote tonight is, again, going back to this very simple point. When things are the darkest, light shows up even more. If it's a lighted building with 1,000 candles, no one sees your candle. But it's dark outside, pitch black. See one little light. That one little light shows up, and everyone can see it. I've never seen total darkness very much in my life except one time. Because we think of darkness, we think of things being black. We may have frame of reference, may not. Been inside at night sometimes, but when the light goes off, you think, oh, it's black. But we went to the caverns in Merrimack Caverns with the kids twice when they were young, going back and forth to Texas to my mom's place in Illinois. We stopped at caverns, and they take you back in the back cavern. Of course, there's lights there. And then take you back about a mile or two in the ground. And they do this thing where they shut off all the lights. It's so black you can't even imagine it. Because we think of nighttime, we see of ambient light here, maybe stars above, or maybe even clouds above in the night, which still gets some light somehow, some way. It's not pitch black. But to see that kind of blackness is really kind of mind-blowing. Then it kind of freaks out and they turn the lights back on, they're going to go crazy, right? But to see that, and to see that pitch blackness, and now even a pin light, even a matchstick would light up the room comparatively to what you had before. We are that light. I'm encouraged by that. Even when things look so crazy around us, even when things look crazy politically or morally around us, like I said, the whole debate about transiting the kids when they're little kids is, seems like those people should just go to jail, not be celebrated, not be paid for their services, but thrown in prison for the rest of their life, for mutilating a child. But in that environment, your word, your light, your opinion about God and right and wrong can have tremendous impact. So I encourage you, please, let's look at Jesus' words about being the light of the world and take that to heart, that we can have an impact on our culture, on the people around us. And if no one hears us say a thing, God still does. Amen? God does. It's like going to the voting booth. No one knows what you vote. You can vote whatever you want to. You know who knows? God does. When you talk to your friends about Jesus, maybe no one knows, but God does. When you take the smallest stand for doing the right thing versus the wrong thing, school board, right? Maybe five people know, but God knows. That's who really matters, right? Let's be the light of the world. Let's be the salt of the earth. Let's thank God for all the blessings you give us every single day. And the truth of God's word, which guides us to our next life and helps us know in this life what to say, what to do. Not because of what we believe, but what Jesus did that guides us in our path for right and wrong. And that can change the world because it changes us. So we can have a white pill. We can see the world in a better way. And I hope that in some way this has helped in some small way to see this in a brighter light. And who, in the 60s, who thought the Beatles just left? They just went home because they couldn't believe there was such an uproar about taking a quote of Jesus and partially out of context, really. But that was such an uproar. How dare you say that about Jesus? How dare you disparage the disciples of the Lord? And you say they were thick and witless. How dare you say that? Go home, John. And he did. Never came back to tour after that. It's probably not even what he meant, not really. But people were so offended that you can dare say a thing like that about Christ. Now, if that happened today, do you think that would even make the news? If a popular young magician, but someone young and popular, Harry Styles, I don't know who's hip with the kids today. I don't really know that much. My daughter's left, and my boys don't listen to music much around me. But if that was the big deal and came out, would it even make a news story? Would people just agree and celebrate it? Oh, look, this person's open-minded. Look what they think about culture and their influence on culture. No. I'm going to stop here. I could keep rambling. I don't want to. I don't want to keep it that long, but we're going to stop the lesson here and just think about what God has done for us. Now we can share with other people. How we can be the water that boils. Like we talked about this morning, the train conductor was asked while the train hadn't taken off yet, and he was asked in the steam engine times, do you have water? Do you run out of water? Yeah, I got plenty of water. It's just not boiling yet. We have all the blessings on this. We have all the water. We have all the things. We have all the voice. We have the power. We have the time, influence. We have the money. We just have to make it boil. May God help us to boil. If you need to respond tonight in any way, the invitation, you want the prayers of the church, you want to respond in some way, maybe you need to be restored, let's do that. Let's not wait. If you can help you, would you please come as we stand to sing the song?